Global Product Management Talk. This is Cindy Faye Solomon, your host, delighted to be with you today on Wednesday, March 12th, 2014, if you are in the San Francisco Bay Area in the United States. I'm here live in Studio132.com with BZ Lewis, famed winner of 6 Emmys. And I also have Chad McAllister here with me in the studio. Hi, Chad.
Good morning.
How are you?
Doing great.
Great. So very excited to have Chad here. He helped us launch Startup Product Silicon Valley Community last night in person at Hanhay Investments. And we had a great group there talking about these issues that we're going to talk about with Chad today. What innovators really do. Chad McAllister is currently calling himself an innovation hacker. He's also a PhD, author, professor, and educator of innovation issues. And before we get to there, let me tell you a bit about what you're listening to. The Global Product Management Talk is a top 10 business podcast in the Blog Talk Radio Network. You can find us at www.blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. That is our Twitter handle at PRODMGMTTALK. And that is our hashtag. If you're following the tweets and tweeting with us today, #PRODMGMTTALK. And I will do a shout out to our Twitter followers if you are tweeting. And if you're listening live, by the way, the best experience is to call in and listen on the phone. You're welcome to call in and join us, and BZ Lewis will screen your call. The number to call in is 323-927-2957. That is 323-927-2957. So if you are listening live, the best live listening quality is to call in and listen on the line. Then you won't get the drag or the delay that you would get if you're listening online and following the tweets. We will have the whole discussion available for listening on demand following the event. And you can find this information, as well as the archives of over 100 episodes, at our website, startupproduct.com. Look under broadcast for the past shows, the upcoming speakers, as well as collections of various series that we've had. Thank you to our sponsors, the AIPMM. Our premier sponsor is the Association of International Product Marketing and Management, AIPMM. Founded in 1998, the AIPMM promotes worldwide excellence in product management education through trainings, certifications, and professional networking opportunities, providing corporate members an assurance that their product professionals are operating at peak performance. You can find them on the web at www.aipmm.com. Follow them on Twitter at AIPMM, where they are posting product management and product marketing positions, as well as upcoming events and their excellent webinar series on Friday mornings. Go to AIPMM.com. Thank you to the third annual Global Study of Product Team Performance, which is a survey on the dynamics of product team performance, which identifies the factors that impede or improve product development outcomes. Take the survey before April 7th, and you will get access to the white paper of the results of the survey, which is very insightful about what does contribute to product team excellence. Go to manage.questionpro.com, that is M-A-N-A-G-E, period, questionpro, Q-U-E-S-T-I-O-N-P-R-O.com to take the survey today. Coming up on March 29th is the Startup Product Open Oakland Innovative Unconference. It's all day on Saturday, March 29th at the Port Cowork Space. It blows open the doors for everyone to contribute, question, and interact with each other's ideas, prototypes, products, problems, process using open space technology. Register today for the best price, and if you are a member of the Startup Product community, there is a 15% discount. Go to startupproduct.com and look under the Open Oakland information for more information. Check out the Webcast Digest at webcastdigest.com. Daily curated educational webcasts, webinars, and free online events for your continuous learning. These are daily curated events that are organized by 8 different categories. As a subscriber, you get access to each of the unique URLs to attend. Otherwise, you get access to the full calendar to see all of the different events and details of them, everything except for how to register. So go to webcastdigest.com. Thank you to Blame Sally for the music. And also at Startup Product, we have now a calendar of community events, and we like to post upcoming product events, product management events, and other community events, and delighted to be a media sponsor for the Global Technology Symposium. That's coming up on March 26th to 28th, happening in Silicon Valley. It is the 11th annual Global Technology Symposium, bringing together an A-list of venture capitalists, corporate leaders, policymakers, and entrepreneurs. And they award startups from all over the world. And bring together, really, it is an elite event. It's very exciting, the lineup of who will be there as a judge and the type of startups. We've had the winners of the best startup on the planet have been on the show, and we will be scheduling them following those events. So it is a Global Technology Symposium. Available on our calendar, and I believe their URL is, just search for Global Tech Symposium, and I'll tell you more about it next week. So today I'm delighted to have Chad in the studio with me. And so Chad was a boy who loved to take apart things to see what was inside and what made something work. Not too much. He found that it wasn't too much of a stretch, that he found that he loved electrical engineering during college. After graduating, he worked with teams in small, large, and startup businesses developing products, new hacks that no one had seen before. Sometimes the products made customers into raving fans, and sometimes it was left to him to pick up the pieces and figure out what went wrong. Along the way, he returned to school, earning a PhD in business to deepen his understanding of how to exceed customers' expectations. He also holds a PMP, Certified Project Management, and Professional Product Innovation certifications from both the PDMA and the AIPMM. He founded Product Innovation Educators to teach everyone how to turn ideas into products that create raving fans, and he's currently traveling the United States in an RV, exploring innovation with his family. And he spoke last night in person to our Startup Product Silicon Valley meetup, and a happy birthday to Bob, who we also are organizer of that community. We celebrated his birthday. And a shout out to our new members, both in the Silicon Valley community, Asheville, North Carolina, in the startup product innovation communities in Columbia, and to our new oncoming members and communities. So, okay, Chad, we got through 10 minutes. It's all yours now.
Well, first, how much fun was last night?
Oh, that was great. It was a beautiful space, very easy to get to right off of 880.
Mm-hmm.
Hanhei Investments, very gracious people. And so we'll be having events there monthly now.
And great participants. I had the best conversations. This was the first meeting, you know, never sure who's going to show up right at the first meeting. And such a good time talking with people about what they're doing, you know, their professional experiences, their desires, you know, where their interest is taking them. Had the best conversations and just really enjoyed that. And that was a lot of the value to me, right? I was talking a little bit about some of the insights I've gained from this trip by Maud interviewing innovators. But I think the power of that meetup is the discussions that take place, the networking, the opportunity to learn from each other.
Exactly. Yeah. And you can't replace in person. Mm-hmm. You know, look, I use technology a lot to spread the word, to communicate. And I like to hide behind my computer screen, really. But it's such a different quality when you're in person with people.
Sure.
And
I mean, even this morning, right? I we could be doing podcast together, the studio together, over the internet, right? I could be sitting in my RV or back home in my home office in Colorado. It's nice to actually be face-to-face and work together. And just like at the meetup, I think you exchange more information and you're just more eager to help each other when you're actually together.
Well, sure. And also in person, there's a lot of subtext. So online, it's all, there's no reading between the lines. It's the messaging is the messaging. People think that's all there is.
Right.
Like constantly people will look at a website and decide the product or the company based on what the website is.
Right. In the first few seconds.
Right. And I'll say, look, that's just what they're putting out there. That doesn't mean that's everything. There's a lot more behind the scenes. You have to dig deeper, mm-hmm. or be face to face, and then you get the real story.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. And part of the real story I've been talking about lately is this innovation road trip I'm on, right? So we've been at this for about 9 months now. I have a few months more to go and have traveled the U.S. from starting in Colorado, my home, out east. Did a shout out to a new member, Asheville, went there, hung out in that area for 3 weeks, met some wonderful entrepreneurs and innovators.
When were you there?
I
could have hooked you up with Ty Halleck, who's the organizer there.
Oh, how fun. Yeah. I missed out. But there's some cool things going on, you know?
Yeah, Asheville is very exciting.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah, fun place to be and interesting people to talk with. Took a tour of the Moog factory, you know, and the analog synthesizer guys and what they're doing. And
yeah, there's a lot of music people there in Asheville. That's who's coming into the community.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of audio people.
Yep. It's a very eclectic mix. So we hung out on the east for a little bit and then made our way back through the mid part of the U.S., the heartland, and back to Colorado for a family wedding. And we worked our way south and west. And so now we're doing the west coast. And the we is my wife and two kids. And frankly, we're doing this because we want to build experiences with the kids. You know, you get to a point where you recognize life really is kind of short. You know, I can't believe my oldest is 11 already. This time flies by. And we thought, what better opportunity than to, you know, go on the road and build some experiences.
Right, and great timing before they become teenagers.
And then, frankly, they probably won't want to.
Exactly.
You know? So I'm glad to be able to do it. And it gave me the opportunity to marry something else that I wanted to do up with this, which was I've been involved the last few years helping predominantly larger organizations and individuals that work in those organizations really have a foundational understanding of what is product development and management and innovation, right? What do we mean by those things? What are the processes involved? How should you think about it? And this gave me a chance to go talk with people in a wide range of industries and a wide range of sizes of companies and hear firsthand, what are they really doing, right? Without me kind of being looked at as a consultant or trainer or anything, just someone that wants to come hear their story. And I've enjoyed that immensely, hearing great stories about what people are actually doing and had fun sharing some of that last night and glad to share more today.
So tell me about these interviews, how you conduct them and I talk to people who are really doing ethnography, mm-hmm. they talk about going into the field and observing people. what is your approach to these interviews?
Yeah.
As opposed to when we do product interviews,
right.
Then we're asking people leading questions, and that doesn't really give us a full picture.
Yeah, these are much more straightforward, and I probably don't lean on my experience at all developing products. The ethnography approach is my favorite. It's a wonderful approach for getting insights into the problems people really have. Understanding the tasks they're trying to accomplish and observing how can we add value to that, right? Great technique for really coming up with product ideas and true innovations. My approach with the interviews is much more straightforward. It depends on the person, but most of the time I'm talking to a business owner or a product professional, someone involved in product innovation in their company. And like I said, the range from the small business, single owner, up to the global company. If it's that setting, I like to get them as just telling me a story. What's happened here that you would think of in terms of being innovative? Give me an example of what that's like. And then build on that story and tell me, what made that innovative? How did it stand out from other things you were doing? What was involved in making it real, right? Just maybe the idea itself was pretty innovative, how you came up with that. But then you had to do the execution work to make it real and make it successful. And then I like to find out about the characteristics of the people involved too. What were they like that carried that forward, and how they might think different. And although I've set up some interviews, I've sought out people I wanted to talk with, I've been going at this fairly ad hoc, along the way, which frankly fits with wanting to build experiences with the kids and have a lot of flexibility, and have been blessed with having these random, warm, welcomed encounters with people, right, that just happened. And people I've met that are doing interesting things and have had success. It doesn't take too long to business and go, wow, they're really doing something different and that stands out as unique, and I want to find out more about what's going on. So I've had a lot of happy, unexpected experiences.
Which is awesome that you're so relaxed about it.
So sometimes that's how things best happen, right?
Yeah.
Without trying to force it.
Certainly is. But also, so you don't have goals that you need to meet so many interviews by a certain time or...
Right. Nothing that formal, right? So coming from, having some grounding through the PhD experience and the teaching I do these days, including some mentoring of PhD students, and understanding research methodology, I'm not making any pretense of trying to follow a formal research methodology at all for doing this. I'm just frankly really enjoying learning about what people are sharing, about what has made them successful. And it kind of is this cross-section between what's going on in the innovative space, for product innovation, and then really business ownership and the business dynamics and some intersections there. I can give you one quick example. This was one of these happy encounters, and one I never expected at all, which is from a owner-operator at McDonald's, right? So as I travel, when I'm not working in the Starbucks, the McDonald's kind of becomes my go-to places because they're reliable hangouts, that I can find in most towns across America. And I have to say my experiences with McDonald's has been rather dismal, and would never think I would be addressing them in the context of innovation at all. And maybe that's why I was so utterly surprised when I walked into Mike Yost's store in Oro Valley, Arizona, near Tucson. And first, the store was just different. So this caught my attention, right? Very clean. It was more open. And for someone who's trying to do work on the laptop, there were power outlets everywhere, which is kind of unique. It's sometimes hard, if not impossible, to find a power outlet at a McDonald's. I admit I had checked out the local Starbucks already, which was right next door to them, and they were full. So I came over to the McDonald's. And it was just a very comfortable place to work. But what stood out immediately was I'm there in the morning doing some writing, and I'm hearing people, as they go to the front counter, being greeted by name. Right? And I'm like, what? And some friendly banter going on, right, at the front counter. And they're not just there saying, good morning, can I take your order? Right. It's, can I get this started for you? And they actually know what some people tend to order. And even those people that they did not know the name of, they're still engaged in some of this friendly banter. And that struck me as rather unusual.
at a McDonald's.
Right. Not to say the least. And I noticed it was being driven by this, by one guy, which was Mike. He was kind of setting the tone for this, you know. And I was visited over the course of a few mornings doing work, and finally had to meet him and find out what was going on. And it turns out he is the owner operator of the McDonald's, you know. And it was interesting. I was there enough times during other parts of the day and night to see how this kind of carries over, you know. And it's clearly that he sets the tone. He's building that culture that is really focused on the customer and the customer experience they're having. And, you know, it's a challenge to have that truly sink in and take hold throughout the day when he's not there. And it's actually working better than I would have expected. He's having a good influence on getting his shift managers to carry on his model.
And now, where is this located? Because I noticed, you know, in traveling the country, I've driven cross country twice, mm-hmm. but yeah. I go from here to New York, you know, and back. I don't
right.
generally
you
go
don't
down.
Stop
but
all along.
I was in Florida recently, and I noticed the culture of the community. People are friendlier, or it seems to be when I leave California. But I remember when I first came to California, people were just friendlier. Anyway, mm-hmm. so, but I hadn't thought of, you know, is it specific to, is it in general, is it how service people are, is it the culture of the surrounding environment,
mm-hmm.
Is it the business?
So impressions, at least based on McDonald's and a few other settings, service in a lot of places is less than I would like for it to be, right? You don't see as many smiling faces as you would kind of expect,
but
right?
Because they're working hard.
They are working
hard.
They're not getting paid well. Nope.
Look, food service, they're at the bottom of the rung.
It is.
They're not even...
It's, you know, food service and retail are the two jobs I tell everyone out of high school you need to have, because these build life experiences for you, right? You know, how you work with people, can you
right.
keep that smile on your face, how you
right.
deal with the headaches, and you learn a reasonable work ethic. You get paid peanuts, and you have to do a lot. You know,
and customer experience is a big movement online, trying to convey a human interaction
mm-hmm.
from a digital experience.
Yeah, some connection, right? We talk about a lot about making this emotional connection and bond. And
right.
I think a lot of people are failing at that because they make it look like they care. And we all know,
right.
you figure this
and
game out pretty quickly, right?
Right?
It's like, okay, you don't really care.
Right.
You're
well,
following
I really
a formula.
Care, but I'm not
right.
always... I'm not 24/7 responding to people who are requesting or tweeting
sure.
or whatever else.
And it's
yeah.
a challenge, right? And
sure.
You know, as your influence has been growing, it's just hard to, you can't respond. I don't know about you specifically, right? But I have very limited influence, but it's still difficult to follow up on all the emails, right? And that sort
right.
of thing. And you just can't at some point. But like last night in the meetup, right? You know, that was a nice time that I was trying to be present in the moment and just enjoy that time talking
you
with people.
You had a blast.
Right?
You were having so much fun.
And there were people coming up, you know, I could have stayed there a long time as it was. I, you know, talked for a couple hours afterwards and could have continued. But there were people coming up either with business ideas they wanted to talk about and get feedback on, or things they were already involved. They just wanted to share, you know, and kind of have that practice of sharing and telling about it, right? And really good conversations to, you know, provide some, you know, listen to what's going on. You know, maybe identify some problems with a business plan or a direction and give some different ideas.
And we did even offer that platform for people to get up mm-hmm. and pitch their idea. And we workshopped that.
In real time.
That startup product that I think I was trying to convince him it was a bad idea, but
yeah.
he was not convinced.
Right. That itself is a good, interesting side story, right? Which is a young CEO, visionary, has a plan he's committed to, which he believes will change the world. You know, all those things I love, right? And then you have to balance that with the other side. And this is a really fine line, which I have no idea how you find for yourself. But I think you, through your experiences, you find this for yourself, right? Which is, how do I stay committed to my vision, to what I want to make awesome, right, to have some impact on the world, and listen to wise, more experienced counsel and take that into consideration. But at the same time, if all I do is listen to the wise, more experienced counsel, I may be eroding my actual innovativeness, right? This is a key issue we have with innovation itself. You know, the whole nature of being innovative is you're doing something new, something different, something that, that at least for you hasn't been done before. And if you're inside an organization and trying to be innovative, you're bucking the system, right? You're going in a direction that is new to the organization. A little or a lot of it, right? And so I could see for him, that's his struggle, right? He wants to be committed, and he thinks he's being really innovative. And how do you incorporate the experience, wise counsel, you know, into his plans?
And it is a challenge because, you know, even as a parent, sometimes you have to let people make their own mistakes.
Right, right.
Unless you're investing in them, right? But yeah. then you have maybe a little control, but they're still going to do what they're going to do, and you want them to.
Right.
They'll be better in the long term.
Yep. And if he happens to be listening, a few people came up to me last night and talked about it afterwards and basically said, you know, he's going to learn the hard way. Right, which suggests that, you know, take to heart some of the things you're hearing, because we're concerned, about the prospects here. There's some pivoting that probably needs to take place.
But I don't think he had any investment. He was part of a team. I would be interested in investing in that team because the guy is. He's awesome.
He's awesome.
He stood up He was not going to sit down.
Right.
Yep. He took control of the meeting.
He's awesome.
That's leadership material.
And, right. And you can have, you know, good ideas that might not be positioned properly. You can have ideas that aren't good, and you can still be awesome, right? And he's the kind of guy that he might go through a few roadblocks and break them through and do great. He might fall on his face a few times like all of us do. You know, one of my favorite Chinese proverbs is, you know, fall down 7 times, get up 8.
Oh,
right.
It's tweetable. But by the way, I want to do a shout out to Alicia Dixon, who is tweeting at special 1972, and also our other great fan, Gil Zipperfeld, who is listening in live, and they're great tweeters. And Alicia, you have to tweet us to let us know how your South by Southwest, they did a product management presentation.
Awesome.
And thanks Gil for sharing. He shares how he's feeling as he's listening to the conversation. So thanks, Gil.
Very good. the failing is how we learn, right? The falling down, right? The failing, that's how we learn. And
fall
what
down
matters is
7 times, get up 8.
Yeah, I hope.
Or fall down.
It might
8
be
times?
It might be fall down 6 and get up 7, but I know there's a 7 in there somewhere. The point is you get up, right?
Right.
And if you fall down and you get up and you fix it, no one knows that you fall down, right? That's not what we remember. So it's the learning and fixing and trying. And, no one wants to fail. We don't set out to learn that way. But, boy, God bless you if you take the time to figure out from that experience the things that you should learn for the next time, right? To loop back, I should close the loop
please,
on this McDonald's
please.
Thing before or sequel ago. Why did he bring that up? So he was creating this very different customer experience, which I would be much more accustomed to in my local coffee shop, right? It was going in and being treated more like a local coffee shop, you know, customer, and not just, you know, here's your order, here's your number, you know, your number 52, right? You know, that sort of thing. A very different experience that is unique so far. I've been, this is embarrassing, probably in McDonald's in like 30 states, right? And orders of magnitude better what he's done than anywhere else I've seen. Lots of good lessons there. If anyone's in McDonald's, you should check out what Mike is doing in Oro Valley, Tucson. But the point here for innovation is, you know, a lot of times we have products as product developers and managers that we can't really control the actual product, right? We have constraints. His situation, you know, it's McDonald's. He can't control the products that are cooked, the pricing or anything like that. But we can control the experience, right? The customer experience that is had. And there's all kinds of good examples about doing this. And so that's you know, that's what he can control, and that's what he excels in, that's where he's focusing, is making that part of the business really deliver for the customer, making it unique. That's an aspect of product innovation, right? There's innovation occurring there by recognizing, okay, all these other things are out of my control. I am executing well, you know, the back of the kitchen's all working well. But let's make a fantastic experience for the customer. And a long time ago, Jeffrey Moore talked about this concept, the whole product and what that kind of involves. And the product is not just the physical thing, if it's a tangible product, right? It could be a service, right? But let's talk about tangible product like an iPhone, right? It's not just the physical thing that provides some benefit through the features it has. It's this whole experience that you first encounter by, maybe going online to the Apple site to order it in the first place, you know. And in the case of Apple, for everyone that has received one in the mail or bought one and took it home, you know, some device, you open that thing up, it is almost like a Christmas present, right? The experience is just so clean and elegant and nice, and you open it up and you feel like this is really special. And so your experience with that product is beginning long before you ever actually touch the product, right? This whole product concept. You know, when you call into the company to get help or somehow you contact them, that's part of the whole product concept, this experience. And there's a lot of things we can do as product innovators to consider the customer experience and what that means to the value we're providing. Because that's what it really comes down to. You know, product innovation in a nutshell is, you know, providing value to a customer that they appreciate. You know, and they show their appreciation and by an exchange of, you know, we're selling a product or we're meeting some objectives. Usually it's monetary, so some exchange on the market. But value is the key thing, and the customer experience is an aspect of that.
Excellent. So let's see. We do have some questions. Mm-hmm. And so you're somewhat answering our Q1, which was what can you learn about innovation from small business owners? And I'll tell you, when I think about innovation, I'm not thinking about small business people, right. And I apologize for that.
That's kind of been where I was too, right? And one reason why I'm focusing more on looking for the small business that stands out on this trip, because I haven't ran, that just hasn't been where I've been looking before. And what brought this about was I was having some people help me with my business, you know, my product innovation educators, you know, product training business, that are small business owners. And in the process, they're learning about the things that we teach. You know, how do you develop products? How do you really think in an innovative manner? And they're saying, you know, Chad, these concepts really apply to what I'm doing. They could really help my business. And that started me thinking and is driving a lot of the interviews I'm trying to do. Like I said, they're across the board for company size, but I'm paying more attention to what from a small business, solar entrepreneur, you know, maybe a 1 to 10 kind of person company, what are they doing that can be thought of in terms of product innovation, and how can that we learn from that? So there's the customer, you know, experience is a key one, because as a small business, revenue and cash flow is critical for them, right? They don't stay afloat if they don't have cash flow, and they recognize that customer experience. The good ones recognize that that's driving them. Another trend, another theme I heard out of them often was, you know, something to the effect of, if we knew what we should have known, we would never have done that, right? We would never have gone that far, right? That, you know, maybe if they were the larger company, they would have known better, but they just didn't know better, so they tried anyhow. And guess what? They figured out something. They figured out the way to be successful. And there, a lot of the people have expressed this notion of, you know, we walked into it knowing we didn't know everything that we should have, right? And we just learned as fast as we could along the way what we had to. And maybe there's some aspect of ignorance, you know, is bliss in the sense that you don't let the fear of not knowing, the fear of if you did know, maybe you realize how easy it is to fail. You don't let that fear stop you, right? Just motivated to push through and learn along the way, you know.
And so you went too quickly. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to underline, I haven't mentioned it all, your small business, your business.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So, and this started just out of a relationship with the product Development and Management Association, PDMA. Been involved with the Rocky Mountain chapter for a number of years, which is based in Denver. And so PDMA is a national organization that is involved in, they have a body of knowledge that they've kind of put together for kind of the fuzzy front end sort of things, developing new products. And when I was looking around for what product management means, so in my career, I was the kind of person that worked really well with customers and then leading teams to develop products and learned about project management because I had to. I wanted to avoid mistakes. So that kept me wanting to learn all the time. And project management, over time, I realized it was taking on a wider cross-sectional view of the organization, and there were other things we should be thinking about, I thought, how does marketing fit into this, and is there a sales aspect that fits into this, and there's other things that seems like should be a part of what we're doing than just developing the actual product. And that led me to this thing called product management, right? And I said, okay, well, what is that? How do I find out more about that? PDMA was the first thing I discovered and got involved with them, and that Denver group needed some help with training. They have a certification program, and so created a training program for that and provide that training. And then in my quest, just to learn more about what is this thing, came across AIPMM, who I hear is sponsoring our time together, another wonderful international association that also has their hands around a body of knowledge. And they've actually done something really useful for us recently, which is they sponsored the development of a book, the ProdBoc, right, the Product Book of Knowledge. And so for those folks involved in project management, we have the PMI guys that do the project management book of knowledge, their ProdBoc. And now we have something like that for product knowledge. And that's a very useful contribution because now we can point to something and say, these are the kinds of things we're talking about when it comes to product development, product management. So having said all that, the thing I primarily do with my business hat on when I'm not teaching is helping people move into some kind of product professional role, right? Moving into a role on a team where they're becoming responsible or more responsible or growing in their knowledge of product development. And provide training to do that. And that's productinnovationeducators.com. So I appreciate asking about that. And that's been fun too, seeing how people, what information they really need to be successful.
Which is totally contextual when you get down to execution. Though I agree, people need a foundation. Mm-hmm. And there's no undergraduate degree. There's courses here and there. There's intensives and trainings. But there isn't really any bridges or doors open. Here's how to get what you need to do your job well, or here's what you need to know before you can do the job.
Right. Yeah, it kind of surprises me, and I guess it's just because I'm in the space so much. There's some days, and maybe other people do this too, and wake up and say, I have nothing new to contribute. All this stuff is just known.
Right.
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 Because you're doing it all the time, right?
Right.
But then you talk to people.
But then you talk to people and you realize, no,
right.
These are not obvious.
Yeah, what I consider fundamental,
right.
The simple ideas,
yes.
Right? And there's some simple, I can't even call them nuggets, right? They're critical things that we kind of expect people that are involved in product development to know about. But if you haven't moved into that space, you don't know it. And at the same time, there's so many companies that are ignoring what the basics that should be done, right?
For example.
Yeah. So for example, and none of this seems like rocket science, right? And like at the meetup last night, we talked about and some things. And either the people in the meetup, were the more seasoned product developers that kind of felt like I was preaching to the choir, right? Or the new ones going down a path in a startup that didn't really care anyhow, right? They had their view, right?
They don't care about strategy
And the customer focus, some other things that we can just kind of think of from that McDonald's example from Mike, that's a big one. There's and I've been guilty of this myself, I hate to admit, but a lot of times we get enamored with what we believe is the understanding and the vision of a product, and we march off on creating that thing, right? With really understanding what the customer's problem is and what brings them value, And it sounds like such a simple thing, right? And I've been in too many organizations and on too many product development efforts where you know, maybe there's some aspect the project is the pet project of an executive, and you're building certain capabilities because they asked for it, right? And even if you take the time to do the market research and understand, and by market research, I mean actually talking with people that are going to pay money for this product, if that's your intention, you're selling this product, not just going out and doing, you know, anonymous surveys and things, but actually engaging with people who have the problem, who's you're working on to solve that problem with this product. And you get feedback from them that tells you, you know, the things you're doing are wrong and not the right direction. And you still have organizations that say, in essence, we don't care. We know what the market needs. This is our vision. We're going to go do that, right? And it might not be that blatant. And it might be well-intentioned organizations that say, we represent the customer. We are them. We know what they want. You know, we're going to build to what we like, and everyone else will like it too, right? Regardless, you need to be understanding what the customer's problem truly is and engaged with them. You know, we are seeing a lot more of the notion of co-creation, which I think is really positive, right? And not just merely having the customer's voice, you know, as part of the process, but having the customer as part of the process and creating the solution to their problem with them, right?
That's what the whole design thinking movement is about.
That user-centered kind of perspective, right? You know, focus on the customer. Right.
And the thing that strikes me about that the whole Stanford D School is they talk about empathy, having empathy for the customer, which really goes back to a Native American stand in their shoes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, be the customer.
Right.
But you have to, in order to do that, you have to let go of all of your preconceived notions and suppositions because the customer won't have those.
Right. Yeah, and that can be hard to do, you know. And a lot of time we talk about that in product development. You know, I want to be the customer, right? I represent the customer. We need to check ourselves and say, are we really, you know? On most of the products I've been involved in, you know, my first one that really got me thinking in terms of how we develop products, everything was you know, I'm blessed that it all worked out the way it did, right? Because there wasn't any grand scheme or wisdom in place. I just didn't know at the time what I should have known and thankfully did the right things, right, in spite of that. And that was, you know, in a real sense, you know, living with the customers for a couple weeks, you know, and working with them, and that's all I was doing, right? And I really did become a customer, right? I learned what they're doing, the environment they do it in, what they're up against. And I really was the customer at that point, right? But most of the time, it's I talk to the customer, or I talk to 20 customers, I get a feeling for what the issues are, and I think I have a pretty good understanding of what they need, and that's what we do. And that's very important and very powerful. But we have to kind of check ourselves and ask, you know, are we really representing the customer, or do we just think we are? You know, are we in their shoes or not? And maybe there's other ways to get there, right? So.
In some ways, is we'll ask the customer to give us the feature priorities,
right?
Which never works because they're not thinking from a development point of view. They don't know what features
are
going to help,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
They just know what they want to be able to do, but they're not thinking from a product point of view necessarily. They're thinking from their own process and direct experience.
Yeah, you know, just think about yourself. When someone comes and asks us, you know, what is it you want, right? Pick anything. You know, here's a camera lying on the desk in front of us, right? And we could talk about, you know, what would make this camera better for me? Yeah, I'm going to be talking in terms of, you know, I want it to take faster pictures faster, you know, if it was a little bit smaller, lighter weight, you know, basically things that revolve around, I want it to be, you know, cost me
more
less,
convenient,
cheaper,
right?
You know, faster,
more
better,
intuitive.
You know, straightforward sort of things. Those are all incremental innovations.
Right.
All important. They all have their role in what we're doing as product managers. You know, we do need to be continuing to improve our products over time, helping our products, you know, stay in that maturity cycle of the product life cycle and in the market a long time and competitive with other products. But those things are likely not going to result in any true innovation, right? And like you started earlier talking about ethnographic research, you know, that's a tool where indeed we can have a gain a deeper understanding You know, in the case of the camera, you know, what am I really trying to accomplish with the camera, right? And observe people, how they're using it and what they're actually trying to do. You know, if we did that, well, we might find some real breakthroughs, you know, and completely new things to do that aren't just, you know, better, cheaper, faster sort of ideas.
For sure. So Gil said, sometimes experiencing the product yourself in the customer's office brings new insights.
True.
He said he had a direct experience of that today. So we'll see if he shares his experience.
Good. Yeah. And the important part you said there was in the customer's office, right?
Right.
Because we can do things in our office, in our lab, and not have at all the same sense. And at the same time, watching, you know, same sort of idea of ethnographic research, you know, watching how the customer experiences our product in their setting is really useful, right? But there's lots of ways to get to this issue of what does the customer need. It's, you know, we're in Silicon Valley, you know, and there's
in Silicon Valley, companies have intense rooms where they bring customers in and they sit behind a one-way mirror. Mm-hmm. And to observe the customer, and the UX people will be in there, and the whole team will be in there. These aren't even focus groups. These are usability.
Right.
They just give the product, and they just observe, and they film it, and they analyze it. But that's still someone's coming into a foreign environment. Even if they're not being interacted with, it's still they're not at home.
True.
They're not on their own device necessarily.
Right. You know, very, very important information comes out of those research activities, right? We're getting insights that might be otherwise difficult to get, you know, because we're able to observe without interacting. You know, the person isn't in their environment, but they're still interacting with the product. So good utility in doing those UX experiments and designs and learning from that. But when it comes, and a lot of that has to do with, we're really testing our product, right, for the usability with the person and the utility of our product with them, right? We're finding out how to make it better, maybe not so much finding out what to build in the first place, you know, what the problems is. And, you know, problems just, ideas for problems come from necessity, right? Because we keep banging our head against something. It's like, there's got to be an easier way. And so we start thinking about that. And a lot of times they come from observations because we see what other people are trying to accomplish. And we think there's got to be a better way, an easier way, you know? And just being attuned and alert to the problems that people are having, that leads to a lot of good ideas. You know, that's what's going on. So real helpful.
So what is one thing to do today to improve innovation success? So we've been talking about what is innovation and how small businesses can innovate around the customer experience.
Yeah.
But so if there was one thing to do today to improve innovation success, well, that really is talking about the success of new innovation.
Yeah. Okay. And let me put that in two contexts. Let's start with the smaller environment. Not startup, because that's kind of a different animal altogether, but let's say the small business who they're counting on the revenue for cash flow, right? This is their living. And because of that, because of the cash flow emphasis, and small business owners get this immediately, right? Cash flow is critical for them. I would go back and think about that whole customer experience and what can you do with that. And in the process, when you're closer to your customers, you start understanding their problems a little bit better and what really brings them value. Then you understand more of what you can do to create that value. And that might be just being more aware of your positioning, right? I was recently listening to a podcast and an example of a high-end custom home builder, or I should say remodeler. So they did remodeling on a grand scale, you know, really nice remodeling. And they had expected, as all their marketing in the past was based on their craftsmanship, and they expected that's what people actually valued. Well, then they had someone go ask questions of their past customers and actually study this. And it turns out what people really value was that they left the job site clean every day. You know, if you have a remodeler in your house and they're redoing the kitchen or something, you know, these are big projects. It's messing up your life because now a whole section of your house, that if it's your kitchen, you really rely on quite a bit. So that becomes a very significant burden on you. You know, and what they appreciated so much was, well, sure, they're craftsmen, but we kind of expect everyone at this end to have craftsmen doing a great job, right? And that's just table stakes. But what they appreciated was they left every day things as usable as they could be. You know, they cleaned up the sawdust, put everything back the way it should be, as they could, right? And that really, they learned what made them so successful in the marketplace. So as you get closer to your customers, you understand what they need, you identify more problems you can solve, and that will lead to more innovation. On the large organization, certainly the same thing applies, but large organization, I think one of the key things that we bump our head up against is the mantra for the last few years, if not longer, has been we want to be a more innovative organization, right? And so you'll have senior leadership making this claim that we're going to be a more innovative organization. And so if you're involved in senior leadership in a large organization, you know, here's the issue. You're making that claim, we're going to be all about innovation. And then what are you actually doing differently internal? You know, sometimes I'll see that go along with the new ideation management strategy, which looks like, you know, we're going to let our employees and our suppliers and our partners and some customers all suggest ideas and we'll act on that, right? So they're taking some action, but the employees, you know, over time actually don't feel like anything's changed because now they're trying to promote ideas that they think are helpful and they're getting the feedback, well, you know, that's not what we do here. That's not really aligned with our strategy. You know, We're telling employees we're going to be more innovative, but then by our actions we're showing that we're really not doing anything different, right? And that's a whole separate, you know, talk by itself to how do you do that well. But the issue is large organizations, if you're going to do one thing different today to be more innovative, you need to look at that alignment with what are you saying, if you are saying that we want to be more innovative, and what are you actually doing? What message are employees receiving through the actions? That's a big problem. It's not an easy one.
Right, right. And as we discussed that last night, there's a lot of resistance to change.
Right. And I know when that one came up last night, everyone was raising their hands up going, that's it, right? It's this mantra, let's be more innovative, but we don't really mean it, right? That's kind of how it feels. So, and the folks there, that's the ones that have been in companies have done that, that's how it has felt to them. It's a tough problem.
It is. So we're answering this, but so what do innovators really do? And so it's where do they need to be within the organization to be effective, which is a different question.
Yeah. So what do innovators really do? I think this is not naively simple, right? It's providing something of value that people are willing to pay for, right? Which is the nature of product innovation. And then the tricky part just comes down to how do you figure out what's of value, right? We talked about being close to the customer is one way of getting there, a very important way of getting there. So that's kind of simply what has to happen. As far as different places to be in the organization. This is really organizationally dependent. And a lot of the time, people that tend to have DNA that makes them more inclined to be a product innovator, and I'm of the position, as you know, the folks at Stanford D School would say, you know, everyone has this in their DNA. Everyone can learn to be a more innovative and more creative and be thinking of developing products. And like, some people end up in organizations and they're already predisposed to do that, right? And it really depends on the organization. If you're that squeaky wheel that stands out and is kind of the troublemaker, which may happen more times than not, or if you're the kind of given the leeway and the freedom and the runway to really do that. You know, some organizations recognize that, you know, they're trying to provide extra capacity built into the organization, you know. And one of my mentors early on, Brad Tyler, great technical manager, guy was one of these guys. He's a history major originally, right, and a good engineer, and just will learn anything at any time, you know, just brilliant. But he always looked at organizations as we're trying to grow them. You know, how do I get some extra capacity? So maybe, you know, once I get 10 people on a team, does that free up the effective person to, you know, be involved in more innovative things, right, in total? And looking at running and providing that space for people to go work on projects that might be the next thing, you know. That's pretty important. You know, we somehow need to free up some extra capacity and let people have the flexibility to do that. The reality is, and Abby Griffin, who is probably best known with the co-author Paige, you know, wrote the original paper on Voice of the Customer. And Abby is a professor at, I want to say University, but that might be incorrect, so my apologies if it is. But she's contributed a lot to the field of product development, product management. She's one of the editors on the toolbook series, PDMA toolbook.
Abby.
Yeah, A-B-B-I-E. Griffin, G-R-I-F-F-I-N. She, her and two other co-authors put a book out, I think maybe a year or two ago, I believe it's called The Serial Innovator, but you'll find it under some combination of The Serial Innovator and Abby Griffin. And it talks about, the book is about that issue of how do you innovator inside a large organization, right? And one of the stories I chronicle is Tom, who is at P&G, and how he had some breakthroughs. And of all things, women's hygiene. So you have this male product manager responsible for feminine hygiene and makes some incredible breakthroughs in that space, and is knocking his head against the organization many times, right, to the point where he got fired by one manager, you know, and rehired by a different one. And this is the nature of what makes innovation so challenging in organizations is, you know, indeed we recognize we need to do new things, because any company, if it stays stagnant for long enough, is going to be beat by the competitors, the market's going to change, right, the customer's going to go a different direction. Companies can't afford to stagnate. And we all recognize that, you know, the future is innovation. It's new products that we're going to provide to customers in exchange for them paying us and paying our salaries and keeping the organization alive and sustainable. At the same time, we evaluate things that could be innovation in terms of what we've always done, and things that look like they're too far out of the bounds of what has made us successful oftentimes are killed and not acted on. And many times that's appropriate, right? You don't want to go pursuing things that have low probability, and but you need mechanisms in place to let some ideas run, right? That indeed are the future.
I'm sorry, but we've come to the end of the hour, Chad, if you can believe it.
That was fun.
And so I thought I could, as long as we're talking about the future, this might be a good place to end, but let's continue this conversation.
Would love to.
If you're going to continue to be in the Bay Area, you need to come back.
I would love to do this again. And I got to tell you, this is just fun doing it live.
Yes. Yes, studio. It is. Because I know there's so much more to talk about. I am interested in hearing about, at the end of your journey, will there be a book about your journey, as well as I know you're author of other things and you have other books coming out that I'd love to hear more about, and I know our audience would as well.
I would enjoy that. Thank you so much.
Great. So please join us again. And by the way, our speaker schedule does get updated on a regular basis, depending on availability. And definitely the bias is on having people be available live to join us in the studio. So you can follow us at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK, and you'll get pinged with the updates of the new speakers and the speakers coming up. Thank you so much. We've been talking with Chad McAllister in the studio today. He's an innovation hacker. He's on a cross-country trip in an RV, and I hope to have him back very soon to continue this conversation and to go deeper. Thank you for people who are tweeting. Follow us at startupproduct.com to find out about new communities in person, new events coming up, and weekly webcasts and online digital events, as well as discounts for conferences and trainings and additional educational material. Thank you so much, Chad. Thank you, BZ Lewis and Studio 132 and Blame Sally. And join us again next week at blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. By the way, we're also on iTunes. We're in the Google Play Store. There is a standalone Android app, PRODMGMTTALK. This is Cindy F. Solomon. Thanks for joining us and have a great week.
Cindy just invited me back, as you heard, to talk some more about these things. And we just talked. We're going to try to make that happen end of the month. So delighted to be coming back. I think that's the 29th.
The 29th.
And we'll get to talk some more.
Oh, wait, no, no. So if it's a Wednesday, it will be the 26th.
26th. Great. And we'll get to talk a little bit more and provide some concrete information, too, about what product innovation and product innovators are doing.
Great.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chad.
Lost to a thief on a dry winter leaf. I wouldn't know love if you